The daughter of Moscow City Council candidate James Urquidas, Pris Urquidas, posted on Facebook last Saturday that people should not vote for her father. Pris Urquidas said her father was her verbal and psychological abuser while she was growing up. I spoke with Pris Urquidas at the KRFP studios yesterday.
You're known as Pris Urquidas, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And your father is James Urquidas, who's running for Moscow City Council. I think I should start by reading your Facebook quote, and then we can go from there. Mm-hmm. This says a lot. Hello, please read. Please vote for City Council on November 5th or earlier. And please, for the love of all that is holy and unholy, do not vote for my father, James Urquidas. He was my verbal and psychological abuser for most of my life, alongside the oppressive community abuse of the Christian church, and electing him by voting for him or electing him by not voting for anyone is the wrong choice. I promise you, please believe me when I say he will F Moscow in the ass more than it already has been with the combined might of NSA, MC, Christchurch, Trinity, Logos, etc. behind him. I don't usually make posts like this, dragging my baggage into the open, and I hate asking people to make choices on politics when I'm just one person, but I can't sit by and not say something when I feel directly threatened by this. Please vote Kelly Laughlin Zabala if you can, but at the very least, do not vote Urquidas. P.S. If anyone wants to post this anywhere on their social media, feel free to do so. So that was posted on Facebook Saturday, and it's as of today, it has 117 shares. So I guess my first question, besides the idea that electing anyone who is a psychological or verbal abuser of one of their children might be a bad idea, how does your family experience growing up relate to this year's Moscow City Council elections in your mind?
So, just to clarify, so you're essentially saying that just kind of what other things about him make him not really qualified to be a politician? Or just relate to politics in general, right?
Yeah. Well, there is a strong political influence on this city of Christchurch and the related churches, such as Word of Life and so forth, as a political force. So mm-hmm. I think that's sort of what I'm getting at, and it seems to affect a lot of families mm-hmm. in this community.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and correct me at any time if I'm going off on the wrong path. I think that part of the thing that prompted me to write this is because I forget which forum it was. I watched the Women's League of Voters. I watched that one, and my father started out by equating his signs being vandalized to the discrimination, to the possible discrimination against LGBTQ community. I am part of that, and it was scary to me that he wasn't willing to, you know, right off the bat, take it seriously and be like, yes, I'm going to protect my child. And so that was, of course, concerning. And then you have the answers of the other candidates, which are pretty much just flat out no in general. And eventually he said that he was willing to protect, to keep the ordinance and to essentially finally willing to say that he was going to protect me. But it's that kind of thing where he is always going to be someone who follows the church over what might actually be right, in my opinion. I think that you shouldn't be sitting there trying to, you know, just kind of talk your way around whether or not you're going to support that kind of thing.
So I think it's important that we fight for it to be at the state level so that everyone's protected.
Thank you, Ms. Burke.
Yeah, I wish somebody would have spoke that passionately about when my signs got painted, you know, for my religious affiliation or my political beliefs, and I didn't have anybody speaking like that. When I was a kid, I'm going to have to share this because I don't know if you heard it, but when I was a kid, I got prejudiced against. Go eat your beans and rice. When I was in 14, I was told to leave a donut shop. Why? Because you're a Mexican. So I understand that. I understand prejudice So I believe that the rights that were protecting me then are still the same rights protecting me now. But I don't think if someone told me to leave their donut shop because I'm a Mexican that people would stand for it. I don't think you people would stand for it. I hope not. And I think if people heard about it, that business would be shut down. Because why? Because people have been educated that's evil and sinful to do that. And so I don't agree with the lifestyle. It's a religious belief I have, and I have that freedom under the Constitution. And so, but it doesn't mean that I can't love people. The Bible teaches me to love my friends, and it teaches me to love my enemies and everybody in between. And I don't consider the community LGBTQ my enemies. I don't. And so I want an ordinance that says you can't discriminate against Mexicans from California. Why not? Why not? One of the best places I've seen people get along really well here in this town is at my gym. I go to the Boneyard. And that's why I'm buff. It's a joke. And so I've seen it work really well there.
Thank you, Mr. Kida. This is a
bomb. I'm actually going to ask you.
Like, if you have a kid, that should be your first priority, because that should be a political priority, is taking care of the people here, not following your religious principles. And, you know, you have the, like, religion, the religion and state, they shouldn't be combined. And I think that's something where that concerns me in politics anytime, not just with my father. It's, you know, and then you have the sort of, they are running in a block. And they are sort of telling you that if one of us wins, all of us wins. And they're very obviously trying to take over the council in a way that is particularly frustrating to me, because I know how, I know that they really are out to sort of try and take over the town. And whether they say that it's saving people, or whether it's that they are buying up all the property, or, you know, that they are strong and arming victims into not talking about things, there are things that I won't talk about here, but there are things that I do know. And it's just scary, because I think that I think that he has always proven to me that I am ultimately not his first priority. And I think that someone who's not willing to very openly side with their family should probably not be running. Like, as pro-family, yeah, you shouldn't be running as pro-family if you're not actually going to be very openly pro-family. And, you know, he will always be like, oh, well, you know, I do support you, I do love you, but it's in a very distant sort of, you know, how can I fix this so I feel good about myself again? And I think that that's just something that kind of is pervasive throughout children who have been rejected by the church, or children who have been slandered or just shut out, that's a very common thing of, they want to fix it, not because they want to help the child so much as that they want to help their reputation. And that was something for me when I decided to make that post. I was like, no, whether or not this makes a difference, I want people to know that what he's selling and what he does are different things. And I think that if one person is selling something and doing something different, why couldn't it be the whole block? Like, if they're all associating with each other, it just scares me, I guess.
Is there anything else people should know about your family growing up? You moved here at a certain point when you
were... Yeah. So I was homeschooled till I was 14, approximately. We moved up here, and I went to Logos for 4 years. I graduated from there. And I think that the biggest things that I would say is I was never taken seriously. I was never given a voice. I was very regularly sort of walked over, and the sexism both within my own house, within the church that I grew up in, with the church that I moved to here, all of it is just, it's very oppressive, and it's very scary to be told, no, you can't leave the house because you're a woman and you're not knowledgeable enough to survive. Or no, you can't speak up against me because I'm the father and I'm right. And it doesn't matter what that person is doing. And then you have an entire community of people who are supporting that father or that teacher or that pastor essentially just stripping a part of your humanity from you. And so it becomes this point where you actually think that you are lesser than men. You think that you're more worthless. You think that maybe you are stupid. It scares you more. And it's just, and it's stuff like that. And it's stuff like just, I don't know, my, I don't want to be on here and just absolutely, how much can I curse on here?
I'll have to edit it.
Okay, cool. Sorry. I don't want to be talking him. I don't want to be talking bad about him in a way that's unhelpful. But I think that he is someone who is very much someone who is he's very concerned about the image that he puts out. But he isn't as concerned about behind the screen. You know, he's a very
complicity.
What's that?
Complicit.
Complicit? I don't know. But he's, it's just, it's a lot of, there's been a lot of anger, both from him and just a lot of men in the church in general. And a lot of it is anger towards acting out. A lot of it is anger towards asking for more respect or asking for, you know, more freedom or saying, you know, just kind of like this level of, I'm going to insult you, I'm going to call you names, I'm going to do all this stuff because it makes me feel better. And just kind of having to interact with that level of callousness for so long, like, I kind of didn't realize how numb I'd become to it until I saw him, like, being a politician, trying to sell himself to people in a way that I was like, this is just embarrassing. You know, I'm embarrassed to be his child in the sense that I think that he shouldn't have done this. I don't think he should have gotten up there and you know, kind of put himself on display. And I think that he probably really just jumped into it because someone was like, hey, why don't you do this? He's not out there being like, this is really important to me and I'm really committed to this. It's more just like, I want to help the church. So that's the thing, is his goal is always to help the church and not to like actually be out there helping people equally. He says it is and he tries to live up to it, but I honestly still think a lot of the good things that he does are just to make himself feel good, which is a very common thing with charity in the church. Is it's very much a, let's, you know, pump ourselves up. Let's be very proud of the work that we've done mildly helping people, and but we still don't accept everyone that we should.
Okay, from what you were saying, you identify as a member of the LGBTQ community. Was that an impact on how you were treated growing up?
Definitely. Yeah, no, I mean, I've been told that it makes people, you know, I've been told that it's disgusting. I've been told that it's a mental illness, that I'm just being dramatic, that I'm doing it just to be rebellious, which is like, I wouldn't afford people who have hurt me the time to like actually actively rebel against them. Like, this is something where I'm going to take a stand because I don't want him as a politician, but I'm not going to be sitting around being gay because it'll upset him. Like, and so it's, yeah, it's definitely a lot of just like, it's not tolerated. And even if they won't like openly be as insulting as they are in private, it's still very clear how my father, how the church community in general feels about that. It's very much like, it's for some reason a worse sin than other sins. It's like this just unnatural, terrible thing. And it makes you feel so bad. It makes you feel so idiotic because you're like I have a girlfriend and I love my girlfriend so much. She's one of the best things that's ever happened to me. She's so patient and kind. And why would I ever want to give that kind of human connection up for something that I have yet to be, it has yet to be proven to me that they are actually as kind and loving and accepting as they are. Because I think if they were, they would open their heart to the LGBTQ community. And I think that they would be in support of that kind of thing.
Are there, that you know of in the community, are there threats of or the use of so-called conversion therapy on youth who may identify as LGBTQ?
I've heard of a couple cases, but like I personally couldn't prove it, and you know, it's victims that don't want to be pulled forward. I don't think that it's as common a thing here, probably because we just shame people into silence. There were me and I and a few other kids who graduated from Logos around the same time were either outed while they were there or they came out after they graduated. And definitely there's a wide range of how their families reacted, and a lot of shaming, a lot of sending them to therapy, you know, and read this book or go on a date with this girl, or, you know, like, just so many different things to try and, or and honestly, the biggest one is just, you're going to go to hell. Aren't you scared that you're going to go to hell? Is being in love with someone the same sex as you, is that worth going to hell? And that's like their big thing, is they always push that. And it's like, I understand that that's a thing for you, but you cannot bring that kind of bias into your politics, because this town is not made of Christians, and they want it to be, but it's not, and it's never going to be. And so it's just like, yeah.
Okay. I sort of want to get into a little bit, maybe if you have any reaction. We've heard about of a couple of cases where New St. Andrews students are living in these big family houses, which are essentially boarding houses in Moscow, who abused children. There's a Sittler, I don't have his first name right off the bat, but Stephen Sittler, who abused many children. He only pled guilty officially to one, but he made the admission in the statement that, you know, it was, you know, well over a dozen, I think. And Doug Wilson, the pastor of Christ Church, wrote a letter to the judge calling for, you know, saying that, you know, I'm his counselor and he's, you know, redeemed your, you know, he's, you know, calling for a measured sentence. And the same with Jamin Wright, who was 10 years the senior of the 13-year-old Natalie Greenfield. And we've heard Natalie Greenfield's talks as a childhood sexual abuse survivor, saying, you know, half a dozen other similar cases are being hushed up in Moscow. That was a couple years ago. And how there's victim shaming. And also in that case, Doug Wilson wrote a letter to the judge, you know, talking about Jamin Wright and, you know, calling for a measured response. And we do have both Sittler and Wright living in the community. Sittler is in a situation where he can't be around his own child. That there was a marriage that seemed to be arranged inside Christ Church, and he can't be, because he's such a pedophile and admitted to it. And his mom and his wife have to take polygraph tests in order to be guardians around him when he's around his own child, who was born like 3 or 4 years ago. So we have those situations, and, you know, I'm not necessarily asking you to compare your situation with those, but there seems to be a pattern that, you know, people in Moscow are actually just finding out about, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, these cases are sort of old, but still, if there's other cases, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I was wondering, you know, the intersection of power politics and family power and things like that, you know, if you have any thoughts about that.
Mm-hmm. Those are two very good examples of when what happens when you try and mix church and state. Mm-hmm. It's very much like this. Those people broke the law. That should be the end of it. They hurt people. And then you turn them in, and then there's the legal processing for that. But instead, Doug Wilson decided to step in and try to make himself an authority over the law. And, you know, there's this, like, there's this verse in the Bible that essentially says, give unto Caesar what is Caesar's. And the people are asking Jesus, should we pay, I think they're like, should we pay taxes or something? Because Caesar isn't in charge of us. And Jesus was like, well, you live here. Like, you are under this authority. And if you want to, like, worship God, if you want to honor God, then you need to honor the laws that you're under. Unless it's, like, you know, actively hurting someone. And they literally sort of, someone was actively hurt, and then they did the opposite thing. They took that protection away from those children. And Christians, a very common emphasis is how important children are and how, you know, they're like clay and they need to be molded. And they acknowledge that what the children experience when they're younger will affect them as adults, which is why it's so important for them to, you know, put them in Logos and then put them in NSA and that kind of thing. But if that were true, do you know how traumatized that kid's going to be growing up with a literal pedophile as a father? That would be horrible. Especially, even if he doesn't find out for years, right? Mm-hmm. If I found out as an older child, you know, 12, 18, whatever it is, that my father was a pedophile and I had been allowed to be in his presence, that there was always that danger that I could have been molested, you know, that's horrible. Why would you allow a child to grow up like that? And so that, you know, of course scares and concerns me that they, you know, claim that they are good people and they claim that they are, you know, good citizens, and yet they won't even uphold the law in the way that it needs to because of that lack of accountability. Because for them, it's always about saving face. It's always about minimizing the damage. And, yeah, it's just, I don't know.
There are
also other cases, ones that have been
silenced.
Yes. Yeah. And I obviously can't talk about them because I don't have it's not my story to tell. I don't have the evidence, but I know for a fact that these are not the only two cases that Doug Wilson has intervened in, negatively. He's threatened things that he shouldn't have threatened, and he has intervened in ways that he should not have intervened legally and morally. And it's just like, where does that end? When do you decide that the law, why putting Christians on a political board that's supposed to help the whole city, and they're all connected to these churches and these schools and these businesses, and it's all one, because you go to Logos, and the best possible option if you're in Logos is to go to Christ Church. There are people who go to other churches, but most of the people in Logos go to Christ Church. And then you graduate from Logos, and the best, like what they want for you to do is then immediately go to NSA. And then when you graduate from NSA, a very common thing that happens is people go to MZ, or people work in the businesses downtown that are part of the church, that support the church. And so it's very much this closed circuit. And that's, you know, it's why it's very hard to escape. And then once you escape, it's very scary because you see how controlled their route is, you know? And it's like, if you actually wanted to spread the word, if you actually wanted people to help, you would send your children, you would send your disciples, you'd send them everywhere. You wouldn't just keep them in this closed Christian circuit. You would actually be out there trying to save people, trying to help people, trying to show that you're good, loving people. But instead, they close themselves off and they hide these things because their image is so important. And so putting people on the board that are in support of those kind of things, that are connected to those businesses and churches and all of that, is concerning because it's already, there's been a trend of things being hidden. And I've had people close to me that have had stuff hidden. And you know, the amount of victims that have come to me because of this is terrifying. It's devastating that no one is taking this seriously because he is, you know, Doug Wilson is powerful enough to hide this kind of stuff. And it's not even that he alone, it's that his whole community comes up behind him. Because no one will say this, you know? No one will say, this person abused me, this person, you know, tried to fire me, this person discriminated against me. None of that, because it's scary. And this is scary for me, to have to be out here saying these things and know that all the people I grew up with who hate me because I'm gay, who hate me because I have tattoos, like, that's a legitimate thing that people get angry about. And it's like, this is my life, this is my body, why is this your problem? And just stuff like that. It's like, that's scary to know those people are walking around. I know their names. I know their faces. I remember their words, and I know how they treated their kids, and having to go out and say all this stuff on the radio, say all this stuff, you know, on my Facebook posts, go out there and know that I'm going to be most likely attacked, or they're going to try to attack me, because they've done it before, they'll do it again. And that's scary to have to open myself up like that. But it's also like, I feel like I'm at a point where I can try and say something, and I want to be someone who helps other people come and saying things because they are out there. And yeah.
And it's scarier to imagine this continuing to happen.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm not under any illusions that I alone can stop this, but if I'm one more piece of the puzzle towards, you know, exposing how cruel they often are, that's good enough for me.
Chris Urquidez, thank you very much. Do you have anything to add?
Honestly, the only other thing I would say is, like, I mean, and people have said this before, but, like, look at the facts. You see the three, you know, you see Laughlin, Kelly, Zabala, you see them out there. They're giving you facts. They're telling you the range of people that they're going to help. They are not saying that they're going to be out there stopping people the way that you know, Berenz and Mitchell and my father, Kitas, are essentially saying that they are out for profit and they are out for their own community. And they, you know, they won't say that in those exact words, but they're like, we're pro-business, we're pro-family, but it's pro their business and pro their families, unless it's your gay daughter, and then they won't talk about that. So that's about it for me.
Thank you very much, Pris Urquidez, daughter of City Council candidate James Urquidez.
That was Pris Urquidez, the daughter of Moscow City Council candidate James Urquidez. KRFP contacted James Urquidez, giving him an opportunity to reply to his daughter's statements. James Urquidez said he had already discussed the issue in an interview with the Daily News for a story which he expects to be published in Saturday's paper. You're tuned into the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.